with Phil Parr, and we haven't had, it's been at least 6 months since we had you on, because I saw you about 6 months ago. Dan Rossi, welcome again, sir, to Blind Like Me.
Hey, it's good to be back. Good to be back.
It is. We were in Pittsburgh. I guess it's been actually about 6 months ago. It was in October, so we haven't had you on since then. And Dan is, well, tell us about you. Tell us about you, about your job, but what you do for a living.
For a living, I'm a computer geek for Carnegie Mellon University. I manage Oracle databases on Unix platforms, and we support applications for the university, like our help center and our electronic classroom, and all kinds of different things like that. Our web front end and some of our email and computer accounts, all that kind of stuff.
And you maintain these computers,
make sure. Exactly. I maintain the databases and do backups and set up new databases and performance tuning and all that kind of just you know, back office kind of work.
Yeah. Now, you don't do this by yourself. You have others who do the same thing with you, who work.
I have an office mate, Brian Bird, who also does basically the same thing on the same databases. So we cover for each other. And then there's another group of four database guys in our group who maintain a different set of databases. And so there's an awful lot of databases at the university. So it takes a whole crew to keep everything going.
Approximately, just guess, how many computers are we talking about?
It's really not that many. I mean, basically, we maintain about a dozen in this department, and we maintain overall, between all the guys, we probably maintain maybe 20 or 30 machines.
Yeah. But these are large machines. I mean, these aren't your home PCs.
No, they're mostly Unix boxes. A Sun, running the Sun operating system called Solaris, and they're pretty stocky machines. They can run multiple databases at a time, and they have an awful lot of disk space behind them. We have a couple of databases. The upstairs guys maintain databases that are over a terabyte and a half or so.
So it's
a lot of data.
Yeah. So, you know, I know this isn't what we originally were going to talk about, but just let me just ask you this one question. When you went there and you said, "I'm Dan Ross, I'm totally blind, I'd like to be one of your computer maintenance," and somebody had to say, "Yeah, really."
Well, it's even a little stranger than that, because they came to me. I had been working for IBM at the time, and a friend of mine who was working here at CMU said that you know, CMU was looking for someone to do some Oracle database work for them, but they couldn't afford to hire somebody with actual Oracle database experience, because that's can be kind of pricey. And so they came to me and said, "If you're willing to learn databases, Oracle databases, we'll hire you." And so I kind of knew that things at IBM weren't going well for our group, so I decided to bail out, and I came here and started learning Oracle databases.
And been there ever since.
Yeah, I've been here. It's coming up on 8 years.
Now,
or 7 years.
Some way you got into some, maybe it didn't start out this way, but you got into some instructional duty some way. How did that all happen? Aren't you teaching some?
No, I am. I started out a couple of years ago. I was approached by a professor at CMU to basically help out some students and give them some guidance. They wanted to design as a project something, and they weren't sure what. They wanted to design something, to some software or product to help the blind and visually impaired.
Okay.
And so I basically kind of became a consultant for them, or a guide for them, just to help them, a mentor, if you will, to kind of give them some guidance, because they came at this with not having any knowledge of blind people, or, you know, and of course the first possibilities are always, you know, we want to build you some kind of sensor vest so that you wear this hat with sensors on it, and when you walk
yeah,
around, it vibrates and it tells you where things are. And I steered them away from that. They tried to go with the navigation system that, you know, basically every building would have to be retrofit for this navigational system, and they wanted to put an antenna on my cane, and I'm like, yeah, it's just not practical.
That's not what we need.
Exactly.
Not what we need, really. We know, we can get around pretty well. We got that down, either dog or cane. You can get to work. I don't need that. See, you showed them what we did need.
We kicked around some ideas, and I had, at the time, I had just started using a talking cell phone, one of the smartphones with a screen reader on it, a full-blown screen reader on it. And I thought that this was a great platform for developing applications, because it's a cell phone. If you're going to be carrying it anyway, why don't you make it do double or triple duty doing other things rather than have to carry around a separate piece of equipment to do something?
Yeah.
Because it's capable of talking. It's got the screen reader. It's got, you know, speech synthesis all built into it. It's nice. It's small. So we started kicking around ideas for what we could build on that platform.
All right.
And we came up with a few ideas. And the one idea that is most developed at this moment is a currency identifier.
Okay.
So you use the smartphone. Pretty much all of these phones have cameras built in.
Mm-hmm.
You take a picture of a bill, and it tells you what it is, what denomination bill it is, a $1, $2, $5, $10, $20 bill.
Okay.
We had developed some other interesting technologies as well. One of the early projects that we worked on was a barcode reader built on the cell phone platform. So it uses a little barcode reader that talks to the cell phone via Bluetooth, and you can use the barcode reader to scan any barcode that's in the, you know, national registration, barcode UPC registration, and it tells you what the product is. And thirdly, we, using the cell phone and a GPS receiver, actually the GPS receiver was on the Carnegie Mellon shuttle. We have a shuttle bus that runs all around campus and to the local neighborhoods, so people can just hop on the shuttle and go to and from campus.
Uh-huh.
We put a GPS receiver on the shuttle, and we had a server running in the background, and basically you could use your cell phone, go to a website, and say you're at this stop for the shuttle, and the system would text message you when the shuttle was like 2 minutes away or 3 minutes away.
This wasn't already set. They weren't already keeping track of their bus with a GPS.
No, not at that time.
Oh.
So what we've done is a lot of the people involved in these different projects, really decided that we could make some useful products, not just for the blind, out of what we'd come up with so far. So we've spun a company off from Carnegie Mellon, and we're called BeaconSys Inc. or BeaconSys Incorporated. And we have a website, www.beaconsysinc.com.
Uh-huh.
And we are basically going to be bringing versions of all three of those products to market. Now, the currency identifier is pretty straightforward. You know, you snap a picture and it tells you what it is, of a dollar bill or, you know, any denomination bill. That will probably be coming out within a couple of months. We hope to be selling it by the time of the NFB and ACB conventions.
In July.
Conventions this summer,
really.
Yeah.
Because that's a relatively, I mean, there are only maybe 20 different kinds of builds. As opposed other thing, which would be thousands of products, hundreds, you know, thousands.
Exactly.
But Bill, will it be a little database stored in your phone, or what will it?
Right now, I mean, so just for us to have done the proof of concept, the image recognition and the database are stored on a server. So my phone actually sends the picture to the server, and then the server returns the result. It's a $1 bill.
Uh-huh.
We are now working on putting that onto the phone, and we hope to have that fully functioning by the end of this month, by the end of March. So that way it's all self-contained. And it's a pretty... You know, it does a lot of pattern matching, so it's kind of hairy software, but we've got some good guys, really sharp guys, working on getting this crunch down to actually fit on a phone and function, because, you know, the cell phone is somewhat limited in its computing capacity. But we think we can pull it off, and so by the end of the month, we expect to have it all running on the phone, and because that's all we want this product to do. We don't want it to be an optical character recognition system, because basically the goal is to put this out as cheaply as possible. And we expect this to be in the tens of dollars, maybe $20 or $30 for the software package.
Yeah.
And obviously you'd have to have the phone and the talk screen reader or mobile speak screen reader. And then for, you know, $20 or $30, you buy this software package, and now you've got a currency identifier.
And so you download it to your computer, and then you Bluetooth it to your phone, or what? How would
you? Yeah. I mean, you can. We haven't been expending as much energy on things like that distribution, but think that we can even distribute it, you know, on the web. You can go to our website, and it will, you know, multimedia message the application right to your phone. So you can go to the website, pay for it, and it puts it right on your phone.
That'd be great. And it's going to be $25. It's going to be cheap.
That's the goal, yes. The primary goal is to sell this as cheap as possible, because we realize we can't build a company on that, but we really expect to just get our name out there and you know, get our name into the community, and be able to give a useful product for a really cheap price. Because most of the other currency identifiers are either built into very expensive products like Kurzweil or the KNFB reader or OpenBook. I think they all do that. But they're all, you know, multi-hundreds of dollar products. And other than the KNFB reader, they're not portable. So that's the goal. The other two products, the barcode reader and the transportation system, are going to be fleshed out a lot more over the next few months.
Uh-huh.
And they will, especially the transportation system, the main goal for that is for giving transportation information to anybody with a cell phone, with a smartphone, so that we'll work with the bus systems in different cities. And right now we're working with Johnstown, Pennsylvania. And they have GPSs on all their buses, and we use that data so that anybody who goes out to a bus stop, you know, if they have our software, will know where the buses are, where the next bus is. They'll be able to do things like even say, you know, I want to know when this bus arrives at my bus stop, and it will gather scheduling data and say it's supposed to arrive at this time, and it will have, you know, the actual real-time data to say, well, it's currently still in downtown, or it's currently three bus stops away. So you'll be able to know, because plenty of times people walk out to bus stops. This happens to me all the time. I just walk out to the bus stop, and I may wait 20 minutes because a bus is caught in traffic or whatever happened. So that has the widest population. I mean, I think sighted people will want to use that. We'll be able to flesh it out with many more features like scheduling or notifications. It'll text message the phone when the bus is at a certain stop so that you know you can head out of your office and get to your stop in time. So we're really excited about that. That should have wide availability to everybody. The biggest part will just be we have to get into the bus systems for each city and
that have to be done on a city by city. You'd almost have to call your own city and negotiate and find out if they are controlling their buses with GPS, and if you are, can we tap into your system? So but the currency identifier and the barcode reader are things mm-hmm. that we should have the barcode reader, I guess, within a year, you think, maybe next.
We expect that the barcode reader should be out, I would say, by the end of the year. The proof of concept works. We've done it. I've used it. We've changed the barcode reader. The first barcode reader I used, although it worked, it was a little difficult to use because you actually had a little pen. It was about the size of a magic marker.
Yeah.
And you actually had to run that pen right over. It had to be in contact with the package, and it had to run right over the barcode. So it was kind of difficult to find the barcode. The reason we went with that in the initial concept was because it was the smallest barcode reader we could find.
Yeah.
Easily fits in your pocket.
Yeah.
The big omnidirectional ones are fairly large, and it's, it'd just be a bigger...
Fairly large
thing.
Is an understatement, sir. They're a mammoth. I've got one. I have the older model, and it's a huge... I've never taken it anywhere. I'd feel like an idiot going in the supermarket. This is a massive thing hanging on my belt.
We've got a new one that is bigger than the pen, but it's still very portable, and it's omnidirectional, so you can shoot at a package from a foot away, and so it should be able to attach the entire image of the packaging. Now, probably what's more like 2 years out. By the end of next year, mm-hmm. I hope to eliminate the barcode reader, the second piece of hardware entirely, and use the camera on the cell phone as the barcode reader itself.
But initially, we're going to have another thing that will Bluetooth to your phone.
Initially, yes.
Now I'll be very happy with that. That'll be a so I can walk through the store and.
Right. We also expect there'll be features in that system that will do things like you can scan things as you take them out of your cupboard, and it will keep a grocery list for you so that it will know what you've consumed.
Uh-huh.
And then when you go to the store, you can just bring up your grocery list. We've been working with a grocery store here in Pittsburgh, and they are giving us access to their database so that we can actually go into a grocery store and it can tell us where products are. So if we have a grocery list in the phone, it can actually say, these tomatoes, canned tomatoes, are in aisle 4 on the right side.
Oh, that'd be so great.
that
would be nice.
That would be very useful, I think. And so we're actually also looking at ways, functionality that we can build in that would make this product interesting for the sighted community as well, because I think my goal is that the company builds applications that are accessible and not necessarily accessible applications. I would rather that we build applications that a wide audience will use, but that they're 100% accessible to the blind.
Okay.
Now, the currency identifier, not so much. That's an accessible application. That's an application, you know, that's adaptive technology straight out.
Yeah.
You know, there aren't going to be a lot of sighted people who need to identify their bills via cell phone.
It's amazing how sighted people take that for granted, you know?
Yes.
And we you know, but used to be my pitch was cell phones. Now they took that away from me, and we got talking. So I used to say, you know, all you front ask, make a little speech. I'd say, you folks, when you get through listening to me, you're going to go check your cell phone and see if you got any calls. Well, I can't do that. Well, now I can, so that's ruined
right.
my, you know, but sighted people just look at a bill. That's a 20. You know,
right. And you know, there's certainly, you know, you can always ask when you get your change back and such, but personally, I'm not that disciplined. I will grab change if I'm in a hurry and stuff it in my pocket, and then I get back to my office and I pull out, you know, this wad of change in my pocket, and I don't know
yeah.
if they put the 10 on top or they put the 10 on bottom.
Because they want you to hurry. They want to get you out of the way, and you
sure.
don't want to stand there and look real blind and say, what is this and what is this? It's,
right.
You know, it's a matter of dignity.
Yeah, and I mean, there are times when I will do that, and there are times when I don't do that. And
yeah.
so if you're not going to do that kind of thing 100% of the time, then it really helps to have
right.
something to assist you. I don't expect you may always, you know, stand there and snap pictures of bills when you're getting your change either. But the fact that you can step away and do that without, you know, holding up the line or anything, I think that's just, it's a bit more independence.
Well, and not having to worry about, because I put things in separate places.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I know I've got ones, well, I put them in one place, and then I'll make somebody stack my money, do this money right. If I've got fives and two 20s, I'll make them put the five on top, and I put it right where I know where it is.
Right.
And I won't have to do that anymore. I can just... You know, I can.
That's you know, the ultimate goal is just this is a convenience application, and you know, and that's why it has to be priced cheap. Nobody's going to spend $100 or $200 just to know, you know, what bills they have in their hand. I mean, it's not. I don't think it's that valuable of an item. But I'm hoping for $20, people will say, you know. That might be handy for those times when somebody isn't around to tell me.
Even old Phil, who buys everything, doesn't have a money identifier. Listen,
exactly.
give us a website where we can go. Do you have information on these products on your website? Or
yes.
What's up
yeah,
there?
We do. The website is still, you know, a work in progress. It's changing every day.
Uh-huh.
We keep updating, you know, working on the text and descriptions for the products. But it is www.beaconsysinc.com, BEACONSYSINC, BeaconSysInc.
BeaconSysInc.com, and that'll show you, and we should have the money identifier should be here. If you're going to demonstrate it at the conventions, and we're going to have it pretty soon.
I'm hoping probably... by the end of April, we'll be, you know, done with most of our beta testing and usability testing.
And I just want you to keep in mind now that if you need someone to beta test for you, there's this boy in Texas that would love to help out.
Well, you know, we'll definitely be collecting some beta testers, you know, because we need people with, you know, who are using smartphones
what phone do I have? A Nokia, and I have Talks on it that I use all the time. That was a major breakthrough. If you're a blind person and you don't have that, figure out a way to get the state to buy you one or buy it yourself. It is wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, it's freedom.
It really that's why after I saw and started using my Nokia phone with Talks on it, I really thought, you know, this is the platform that is really accessible. I mean, you're going to be carrying it. Why carry another device to do something that we can do on the cell phone?
Yeah.
And it's an off-the-shelf cell phone, so it's not, you know, it's not adaptive technology that is going to be, you know, outdated in 3 years and then not upgraded for another 3 years after that. You can buy any new cell phone, any new smartphone that comes on the market.
You
next
can move
month.
It, move it from phone to phone. If you buy, if you got a new, you lose your phone and you can move that. This stuff can be moved. It's all and having a cell phone is just is a to be able to just to get my cell phone because I keep my phone book now is kept in my cell phone.
Yep.
You know, that's my new. I used to keep it on my computer, and you'd be away from home, and you'd think, oh hell, I need so and so's number, and you didn't have it. Now you do. Anyway,
I'm slowly migrating. You know, I was a holdout against cell phones for a long time. I refused to have a cell phone for years until. Really, until the accessible cell phones started coming out. Because I just didn't see, you know, I mean, yeah, the cell phone itself was nice, but I didn't need that functionality of just having a phone with me. But now I'm slowly migrating more and more things onto the cell phone. I use the calendar, I use email. So it's becoming more and more useful, and it's exceptionally portable, and you can't beat it. And like I said, because it is off the shelf, off the shelf cell phone, there are no long lead times between upgrades or anything. I mean, new cell phones come out every couple of months, and you can just buy a new one or, you know, trade in your old one. It's
nowadays that's the way they do. I bought one in '93. Was my first one.
Mm-hmm.
It was a bag phone. It was huge. You had to have a trailer to carry it around. That year we went to Los Angeles, and they wouldn't let me call home until they called home and verified that I was who I said I was and that they could put the bill on my phone bill at home. That's how bad it was. We were riding in this car, and I had a nice signal, but they wouldn't let me call home. Now you just dial the number, you know?
It's great. And, you know, it seems like mobile speak is even pretty, you know, the prices are becoming more affordable. I think AT&T right now has a deal where you can get mobile speak on a phone for like $89.
Somebody had a deal where they give you your money back for your talks. I think I got my money back.
Yeah, that was before it was Singular. I think it was they charged you $200, but then they credited it back. You know, your bill. They've changed Singular's now AT&T, and AT&T now gives you mobile speak, and I forget what phone they're putting it on. It's an N73 maybe, but it's a reasonable accommodation these days, I think.
Well, that was the deal when I bought mine. The phone was $200,
right?
And then the mobile speak was $200, but I got that $200 back.
Right.
For the mobile fee. All right, we'll let you go back to work. One more time,
www.beaconsysinc.com.
Beaconsysinc.com. Daniel, thank you, sir, and I'll be talking with you.
Thank you, Phil.
Bye-bye. And we're just sitting in our little home here, and up in North Texas, north of Dallas, is Bruce Riddle. Bruce, sir, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good this morning, Phil. How about yourself?
Just having a good morning after exchanging a little wasp sting story with you that happened to me last night. Got stung by a wasp. I'd forgotten how bad that hurts. Painful.
Yeah, I bet it was.
They say you put tobacco juice on it, but I didn't happen to have any. Bruce, your level of vision is zero. You don't see at all, do you?
I have very, very, very little light perception, light projection, whichever the least of the two. If I'm in a very dark room and you flip the switch, I can tell that. That's about it.
You know the light's on.
Right.
Has it been this way all your life?
No, lost my vision in 1987. I had a brain tumor removed, and the brain tumor was wrapped around the optic nerve.
And that took your vision. Up until then, your sight was normal?
It was starting to decrease because of the brain tumor, but I led a normal-sided life, if you will.
Did you drive? You drove a car, and the normal things that our sighted people do. What age were you when this happened?
I was 20.
So you were a grown man. You had, thank God, lived through your teenage years as a sighted child. Because it's my belief that that teenage years or childhood is rough sometimes on blind kids. Did you have any idea this was going to happen to you someday?
I think I probably knew from about 15 or 16. So I was getting headaches about that time or whatever. And it's one of those things that I wouldn't tell anybody because I thought I knew what the answer was. And when I was about 16 or so, I lost a cousin from a brain tumor. It was cancerous. And so, you know, one of those things, if you ignore it, you hope it goes away.
Yeah. And so, yeah. And that's what you did.
Yeah. I took my mom out to bingo one night. She loved to play bingo. And she'd see me. She said, "You can't see that card, can you?" And I said, "No, Mom, I can't." She said, "I'm coming tomorrow to get you, and I'm taking you to the eye doctor." And when we went, that's when he first suspected brain tumor. So.
And did he know at the time that when he removed the brain tumor, probably this was going to take your eyesight?
When I ended up going down there to MD Anderson down there in Houston. And they told me, I asked him, I said, "What if I don't have the surgery?" And my doctor at the time said, "Well, how old are you?" And I told him, she said, "Well, you'll be blind by 22 and dead by 23. So we talked about the different things, and then they told me there was a chance they would actually have to clip the optic nerve. And so, yeah, going in, I knew there was a chance I would go blind, but it turned out they didn't. What happened, the brain tumor had been there so long, it had wrapped so tightly around the optic nerve. When they removed it, I had a centralized stroke in the optic nerve itself. So, I knew going in there was a chance. What caused the blindness is not what they told me they thought. Well, they thought they might have to actually clip the nerve, but they didn't have to do that.
But the thing was wrapped so tightly around it that they just destroyed the... Well, you think as you get older. Of course, you're not this old, but I'm older, and I think, what would I do if I learned that, say, you had 6 months to live? What would you do? You'd do a lot of things. And did you prepare? Did you say, "Well, okay, I'm going into this surgery. When I come out, I may not be able to see. I better do this." Did you do any preparation or not?
Believe it or not, Phil, my mom. And this is strange that I say this. Me and my mom had a very close relationship from day one, I guess, and up to the day, I buried her or whatever. But she wouldn't let me do anything like that because she said that was giving in or whatever. So one of the things I had done up to that point was go to the ocean or whatever. And I told her, I said, "You know, come on, let's go over the ocean and we'll get some pictures of me and you at the ocean. You know, something for you." She says, "No, I'm not doing that." And I said, "Why?" She goes, "That's giving in." So, no, I didn't. Wait. It took from the time of being diagnosed to the time of surgery was about a month period. But she basically would not discourage me from, doing things like that.
I can kind of see her point. You think if you do things that you say, "Well, I'm not going to be able to see after this surgery," then you're saying that's absolutely the way it's going to be, and there's not a chance. So you can kind of see her thinking. I'm sure she loved you very much and was just trying to do her best to protect you, from what could happen.
She wanted me to think positive the whole way, not it. You know, I may not get a chance to ever do this again. Yeah. Her way of thinking is, if she wanted me to, think that I'll do this after, I get healed or whatever.
Yeah. What did you think when you woke up and the realization came to you as a 20-year-old that you would never ever be able to see again? What you thought, the world was over, or your life was? Did you know any blind people? Anything about blind people?
Didn't know a thing about blind people, but Phil, I don't know how. I guess we all know how, or whatever. Yeah. But it was something I accepted. It was something I accepted from day one. I never let it depress me. On the way home from the hospital back up to the North Texas area, I had a little dream or whatever, and I said, God, give me that one miracle, give me my vision back. And he said, Bruce, you've already had your one miracle. And I knew what he meant by that, so I never asked again. I would take my vision back in a New York second. But he said miracle was I got off of that off the operating table because it was a chance I wasn't going to survive the surgery. So I never asked again. And people asked me immediately. I went to a little get together, and about 2 months after I went blind, and the guy came over. He said, "You know, Bruce, you're amazing." And I said, "Why?" He said, "Everybody's over here is drinking just to have a good time." And he said, "You got more problems than anybody in this room." And he said, "You're having as good of a time or better than anybody in this room, and you haven't had a drink number one."
Yeah.
And so at this time, I refused to allow myself to do was to get down about it.
Well, that's good because a lot of people don't. A lot of people it causes depression. It causes. It causes them to do things that they normally wouldn't do because they think the life is life as they know it. Of course, has come to an end. But being blind is, while it's a hell of an inconvenience, it's a doable deal. Did you have much education? I guess you were a high school graduate when all this happened.
Correct. Right. At that point, that's all it was a high school graduate.
And you say,
I went on later on to college or whatever, but at the time, I was just a high school graduate.
Before and after, what did you think after this happened? What did you think you could do to compete, to make a living? Were you still living at home, or you hadn't married then, had you?
No, I'm not married yet. I'm going to be married May the 3rd, but I haven't been married. I moved back home, and I didn't know, quite honestly, Phil. It was like, the first 3 or 4 months, I got to remember I was doing radiation treatments and still medical type stuff and recovering. Brain surgery is not really a walk in the park, so I didn't know it until I went, I guess, to Chris Cole to go through some training and stuff. I really didn't know what to expect. I guess I thought like the atypical blind sighted person, and. That there wasn't much that I would be able to do, you know. So I guess I probably, my initial thought was probably, I'm just going to exist now, live and ended.
I'm helpless. There's very little I can do. Of course, Chris Cole, I'm sure you met a lot of other blind people there who had done a lot of things. So you began to realize, I guess the Commission for the Blind sent you there to evaluate you and see what you could do, what your skill levels were.
That's right.
But you met some other blind people there, and you must have begun to realize then that, well, you know, there's a lot of things you can do as a blind person.
You're exactly right. Exactly. Including some of the instructors or et cetera. I wasn't there but a couple weeks or whatever, because a lot of the stuff I had already, Braille, et cetera, whatever, I had already taught myself. So some of the stuff I didn't have to do. Yeah. But just some of the instructors down there were blind or whatever, and only limits I have are the one I put on myself.
Yeah, the sooner you realize that, the better off you are. You say you taught yourself Braille?
Yeah.
That's pretty good. This was after you lost your eyesight, you decided you need to learn Braille.
Right.
So I'll just get the book, or would I get an alphabet card, or Or how did you do that?
I got Braille one book. Basically, I learned Braille for one reason. I'm a poker player, Phil.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to play cards again, okay?
Okay.
And so, you know, I knew to play cards again, I was going to have to learn to read Braille.
All right. Nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. See, in order to Braille the cards and be able to identify the cards, we're going to have to learn to read Braille.
Right.
And you played poker as a sighted person, then also as a blind person.
Right. Still play poker today. Not professionally by no means, but my family and backroom type stuff. I do play, at the casinos or whatever. I'll play on some of the tables or whatever. Some of them they'll limit you, but some of them will let you play.
They'll let a blind person play poker in Las Vegas?
Yeah, especially some of the, where you're playing against the dealer, like Caribbean Stud, Three Card Stud, Three Card, those type of games. They'll let you play.
Does someone have to sit there and tell you what cards you have? Of course they would.
Well, one of my favorite games at the casino is Caribbean Stud, and basically, after everybody else has made their bet, because you got to, you know, they'll turn my cards over. That way, it doesn't influence their bet one way or the other. Because again, yeah. You're playing the dealer; you're not playing each other on that. Uh-huh. They'll turn it over, and the dealer will say you have, you know, whatever, and then I make my decision from there.
Okay, so the dealer tells you what you have.
Right, because the dealer's hand. They've got to stick with their hand because, again, them knowing my card at that point doesn't change. So, yeah, the dealer or if somebody's sitting there with me, they can tell me or whatever. But we turn them over after everybody else has seen. That way it can't influence their bet.
Now, when you first started doing this, was there some resistance? Were there some dealers who said, "Bob, man, I don't want to fool with you. Yeah, why would I want to? Why don't need you?"
I only had that at one place. It was over in, I won't mention any name, but over Bossier City. Most of the place over there have done it without hesitation or whatever. One place, actually, I ended up getting kind of escorted out of the casino because I kind of let the dude know he was an idiot. But a different story for a different day.
I can't know. It's a story for this day. It's a good story for this day. I didn't know you went to Bossier. I'll meet you over sometime.
Okay.
And we'll have dinner, and of course, Luann's. My wife is an avid blackjack player. She loves blackjack.
I enjoy blackjack myself.
And she would be happy to take you around and show you and play blackjack with you. When I just sit there and put quarters in the slot machine and lose my, you know how that goes, slot machine.
But yeah,
let me know sometime, and we'll meet you over there because we go over there two or three times a year. In fact, last time I went, I won. I did pretty good last time. I was the only winner. I won that quarter machine. I won 900 quarters three times. It's amazing. That's not any money, but, you know, what the heck. Okay, so you taught yourself Braille, and what did they think you could do to make some money, make a living, to feed yourself?
Well, quite honestly, that's the one reason I didn't stay much longer. They had it in their mind, and this was 1988 by the time I got to Chris Cole. But in their mind, back then, only thing they wanted to push was radiation. Doing X-rays and that kind of stuff.
Is that right?
And I wasn't interested. And then they said computers, and at the time, I wasn't interested. I wanted to become a child psychologist or something like that to work with children in a recreation center and after school programs, that kind of stuff. And, and my counselor just did everything she could do to discourage that. And so I ended up leaving Crisco after a couple weeks. So later on, when Jaws came out, because at the time, some of the hardware synthesizers, I quite honestly just couldn't understand. And when Jaws come out, then of course I ended up loving the computer, and I've learned quite a bit about computers and et cetera since then. But at the time, that's all they wanted to push was either computer or radiation technician or whatever.
Yeah. I had the same problem. I couldn't, when I first got a computer, I didn't know the language. I didn't know what the alt key was or the control key or the insert or any of that stuff. And if you don't know that and you're trying to understand one of those speech synthesizers that's barely understandable. I thought, hell, I can't do this. I'm not going to be able to do this. I'm not smart enough to do this. Of course, like you said, when Jaws came along, bingo. Made it pretty easy. DeckTalk. DeckTalk was a wonderful little synthesizer. I'm sure you had one. But I wonder why they discouraged you from going to college and getting a degree and becoming a child psychologist.
Do I need to hold on for a second?
No, go ahead. I'm unplugging.
I don't know. I quite honestly, I don't want to give Chris Cole a bad name because he did a lot of wonderful things and still do. I think, quite honestly, at my counselor, she kept saying the state's just not going to allow you to be over children or whatever. And I kept saying, well, it doesn't matter. That's what you're asking me. What is it I'm wanting to do? You didn't ask me, what is it y'all wanted me to do? So I said, and after the third time of calling me in there and me giving her the same answer, and her telling me the same thing, I said, obviously, y'all have done for me what y'all can, and I appreciate it.
I might as well go home.
my dad at the time was terminally ill, and I thought I was better off. I was dated here more than I was there.
Well, your mama needed you, obviously, if your dad was terminal. Your mother, mm-hmm. mother sure needed you. And so they get certain ideas about what you ought to do. You ought to be a vendor. You ought to be a piano tuner. You ought to cane chairs. You ought to do this or do that. And it's very hard to change them because most of those people are sighted, and they don't really understand what a blind person can do. You know, they don't have any idea. Anyway, so you put yourself through college, or you figured out a way to go to college on your own.
Right.
How did you do that? Did you get grants? Did you?
That is one thing. The state did. They paid my tuition. The state of Texas did pay my tuition. And so.
And let you study what you wanted to study.
Right. They didn't care. I mean, even though my counselor Chris Cole kept telling me that they just weren't going to allow that or whatever, but they got time to do it. What now? Where I probably met. You're talking about resistance, and et cetera, from the casino. Some of the professors there at college, believe it or not, were some of the biggest doubters or whatever. And then, after I would show them that, you know, not only could I do it, more often than not, I was among, if not one of the highest grade, you know, in their class or whatever. And so I would win them over after a short period of time. But I went into many classes with a professor thinking, oh, my God. Matter of fact, one, I was going to take a biology class and made a statement to my counselor, I'm just not babysitting a blind person. You know, I have a bunch of students. I'm just not going to babysit. I had her husband that same year for interpersonal communications.
Yeah.
And one of the last speeches I made in the class was about, you know, breaking through the barriers. And I even was looking sort of over his way every once in a while. And I said, and believe it or not, even, you know, and I said, you know, some professors here have even made the comment about babysitting blind people, right? And I said, I think some of my professors now know better. And I never acknowledged any more than that or whatever. You know, sometimes you got to knock down some walls, but, you know.
Oh, oftentimes you do. Babysitting a blind person, they couldn't get by with saying that today. The law wouldn't let them. But we were in the 90s, we were late 80s, early 90s. Was RFP&D around then? How'd you get books? What'd you do for books?
RFP&D was around, but they were often, at the time, if you ordered a book, it was 2 or 3 months before you would get it. So,
yeah.
The state and the school, in this case, I had a wonderful counselor there at the school. She worked real good, and there would usually be a student that she would pay to read the chapters in advance,
uh-huh.
and then they would read my tests and that kind of stuff to me and mark down my answers. So the one thing I did, I had a wonderful counselor on that or whatever. So that was never an issue actually.
And you got a 4-year degree and then went to graduate school, or did you ever go to graduate school?
No, and I never got the 4-year degree.
Oh, you didn't.
I don't even remember. I guess sophomore, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
I back to back semesters, and this probably sounds stupid. I'm going to admit it before I tell it.
All right.
One semester I went to go, and I lost my hearing, or a significant part of my hearing, in my right ear.
Oh.
And it was like I was blind all over again. I just totally was somewhat disoriented because of it. What used to be, you knew where it was, no longer was there because it was coming from a different angle. So yeah. I had to drop out that semester. The next semester, the Friday before it started, I went to pick up all my books. I had a very heavy load that semester. Leaving, I tripped over a bad spot in the sidewalk. I fell and broke my humeral bone plumb in half, had a concussion, chipped a couple. Yeah, so I had to drop out. And you know what? The next semester went to sign back up, and quite honestly, for some reason, my psyche said no.
Yeah.
Every time you go to sign up, something happens to you, so I wouldn't sign up, and I'll get back. I have since decided not to become a child psychologist. I still want to work in an after-school program, but some of my thinking are still old-fashioned, and me and the head of the psychology area had that discussion. And,
yeah.
And so some of my thinking is still a little old-fashioned, and it would probably get me in trouble. You know, I still believe that, you know, for instance, you do have to spank a kid. It can't be the only means of punishment, and it shouldn't be the main means of punishment. But to teach a child sometimes a spanking is necessary. So, and that's just not going to get me anywhere in today's thinking.
No, they're not going to let you do that. You can spank your own children, but you're not going to. They're not going to let you spank anybody. But I think that hearing thing is absolutely. If I lost my, and I am slowly losing it. If you lost your hearing in one ear, you would become quite disoriented, especially you hadn't been blind but 3 or 4 years, you know.
Right, hadn't been blind, and it was literally, and one correction, I wasn't talking me spanking the child. I would, if a parent was coming to me and one of the issues was bad behavior, I'm just saying, had spanking been mentioned, I would have discouraged it or whatever as a, me losing the partial hearing in my right ear was probably feel worse than going blind to begin with, because it was just like going blind again, if you will. And I probably had more of a depression over that than my initial blindness, whatever. Because I just it was a totally new experience, one that I didn't care for a whole lot.
Because being blind and deaf would be a tough thing to be able to deal with. I don't know how people, I know people do it, but it would be very hard. Of course, I'm used to being blind, and you are too now. All right, what did you do then? Did you ever work? Did you find some gainful employment somewhere? Besides playing poker.
I worked at, whatever, they don't pay nothing. Especially when you're not very good at it like I am.
Anyway, what did you do?
Yeah. Just a couple of things. I've worked. Now I do some web design stuff for like people. I make some family trees, that kind of stuff. But at the time, I did some odd and like that when I learned that kind of stuff. I also I had bought a tire shop. I'd invested in a new and used tire shop and stuff like that. So made a pretty good living doing that. Sold that about 5 or 6 years ago when my mom got terminal or whatever. So I sold that way I could devote more attention to her or whatever.
All right, this tire shop. Did you change tires? Did you do the work?
No. I did some, but no, mainly I did the office stuff.
And hired somebody to tire change and air up tires and all that stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, there was times when we would buy used tires and that kind of stuff. I'd go out and unload the tires and that kind of stuff. But as far as putting the tires on and all that, no, generally I stayed out of the shop.
But now you have become proficient at the computer and are able to make a buck or two doing web design things.
Uh-huh.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. How did you get interested in a tire shop? I mean, that's not a normal thing a blind guy would do. How did you get interested in that or get into the tire business?
My brother-in-law had owned a tire shop or whatever, and so he'd just go over there. You know, we'd go over there and, you know, chat with him, just stuff like that. And one come available at a price at a whatever I could afford. Brother-in-law said it was a good spot and all that. It turned out, like I said, I did real decent at it. So, I mean, I made a decent living or whatever. So,
your parents are both deceased now?
Yeah. I lost my mom about a year and a half ago.
And you said a minute ago that you're getting married in May?
Yep, May the 3rd.
And this will be your first marriage?
Yeah, I had a wife one time, but her husband came and got her.
That'll happen. That'll happen to you if you're not careful. Well, all you could say is good luck with your marriage. You're obviously a little over 40, from the way I figure, and that's a little late to get married. But you should know what you want by now, as opposed to getting married when you're 20 and not knowing, you know.
And I figured I'd wait and do it right. I got one of the best young ladies in the world, so if I might as well, if I'm going to do it, I might as well wait until I've done it right. I'm doing it right. I got, like I said, one of the greatest people in the world. I think I called her the weak moment, and she said, yeah.
Well, I saw this thing that Susie did. Just play dumb and act like you don't know. Tell us about Out of Sight real quick, and we'll let you go.
Out of Sight is a chat community. It's chat based. Let me rephrase that.
Okay.
And let me do this. www.out-of-sight.net. And this goes back to me first learning the computer and JAWS and that kind of stuff. When I got JAWS, I didn't know a single blind person really very much, so I had to learn all this on my own. I had to turn JAWS keyboard, you know, and just learn where the AS, you know, all that was. And so when I got JAWS, it opened up the outside world for me, and I've been a big fan of chat sites ever since I first started. Went over on F the People a couple, you know, and went there, and then we've started our own since then. And it's basically a site where you hopefully can find something. We got some tutorials. We have different chat rooms. We got some trivia links. Inside our chat community, we have a movie area where you can listen to describe movies. We have an OTR area to where you can listen to some OTR programs. And same with TV, et cetera, along with regular chat. We have 4 or 5 nights a week. We have some gospel stuff. Miss Susie does a cooking show. We have a little talent deal on Saturday night. So a lot of things over there, but it basically eventually will be a site where it fits most things you either want or need as a blind person.
Right.
And it's not just blind. I mean, we do have sighted people over there. It's for everybody. Obviously, there's more blind than anything, and that's why, you know, we kind of lean towards when we put stuff up or to make sure it's blind-friendly.
Yeah.
But I'm a little bit of a hard ass, Phil. I don't know if I can say that word on here, but I just did. But one thing I like is to get back to my community, because I didn't have somebody that says, hey, you know, to send that Outlook Express message, you can do this. And so if we can make that one person be able to do something a little easier, then we managed to do what we was wanting to do.
All right. Give me the address one more time very slowly, and we'll let you get back to your morning, Bruce.
Thank you very much, Phil. www.outofsight.net. That's outofsight.net. And there's so many things over there that you really will find it's out of sight.
Turned my mic down. Why would they do that? Anyway, thank you for listening. Thanks to Bruce Riddle from the Out of Sight community, out-of-sight.com. outofsight.com. Go over there and check it out. You might find a handyman bunch over there on Friday nights or other times. A lot of things to do there. Anyway, thanks for listening. Come be a guest on the show if you would. We'd love to have you. You can contact me, Phil Parr. All one word, Phil Parr at Consolidated, CONSOLIDATED, Phil Parr at Consolidated.net. That'll get you in touch with me, all right? So we hope you'll come and be a guest. We need guests every week, and might as well be you. Thanks for listening. We'll see you again next week, and stay tuned for the Blind Handyman a little later on, all right?